Welcome to the 25 Years of Vampire the Masquerade podcast, a retrospective.
Hello, folks. Welcome to Crimson Gutter for V5. And of course, I'm Bob, accompanied by Mike.
What's up?
And DJ.
Hello.
All right. Real quick overviews. What's the Crimson Gutter? Real simple. It's a compilation storybook. It's we've been doing a couple of these now, just kind of jabbing at them, seeing what their, I guess, main spiel is, so that folks can decide, do I need this storybook? Is it advantageous? And that's, of course, the angles we're going at. We're looking at it as we read it. Where does it add? What does it do? What does it give? And to that end, we're going to start with whoever would like to weigh in on the actual introduction as they introduce what this book is for, because it is done rather unique.
Well, so, okay, I don't think the book gives itself enough credit for what it is, right? What it calls itself is an introductory chronicle designed to get your characters on the streets. It's a toolbox containing supporting characters, locations, and scenes you can mesh together in a chronicle of your own. What it really is, and the thing I appreciate about it, it's a living, breathing kind of modular chronicle building guide. To me, it's not just a tale for introducing some new guys to Vampire. It's made so you can take this thing out or adjust it or move it over here, slide it there at the beginning or there at the end. It teaches you about immedia res. It does all of this stuff to like guide you into building and telling and altering and reusing your first chronicle.
Now, you mentioned something. What's media res?
Jumping into the middle of a story without too much exposition or explanation.
Sometimes I can remind your university master class degree ass that you got to dumb it down for people. Sometimes even me. I know that term media res because in our storyteller workshop, we've covered that. Hit me with there too, and I had to look it up. But I didn't front. I was like, let me Google foo that real quick. And was like, we didn't call it that. We called it this. And then that was that. But sorry, just me being anecdotal there. But please continue. Or if you weren't done, Mike, continue.
No. I'll cease gushing. If you can't tell, I like the book.
No, gushing is fine. It's just that I was giving you that allotment. But DJ.
But I was about to say, like, what then we'll play devil's advocate, because in the vein of V5, I think we've also seen this before for those of you who have collected V5 up until now. This was also, or an aspect of this was also introduced in the Chicago book, right? Because the Chicago book also gave you the city building ability to do so. The only difference was it honestly just gave you Chicago in general. And I think I also agree with Mike, at least in terms of how it's presented, is it doesn't give itself enough credit because it says it's an introductory guide. I think it's a little bit more than that because the setting is city agnostic and it just kind of builds it. I think of the movie Dark City when I think of it, like the city just keeps rearranging every time, like around midnight, to kind of configure itself to what it needs to be for that evening. And it presents itself in that way. And I think that's what makes it different than something than people who already have an idea of like, oh, how is this going to compare to like, you know, Chicago by Night or any other supplement book regarding a city. What is different about it is that, as Mike had mentioned, it's so modular and you could still keep building on that Rubik's Cube to begin with.
I think the appeal that this book has for a lot of folks, the fact that it's about your own story, it's not specific. This is a storytelling book, in my opinion. It's for an STs and I'm going to do a V5 chronicle, but I don't know where it's going to be. Good. Don't even think about that. Here's this book where you can start reading through it until an idea hits you. And it's going to hit you. There's so much different content in here in terms of story building that something's going to grab you. And, you know, hopefully something's going to grab you, I should say. You know, never say never, right? But the idea is that it's going to do that and you're going to hit the ground running and going. But I, in particular, like the attention to domain. They give it a whole section, right? There's like a whole page dedicated to domains. And this is what goes on. This is like the main dance for a city. So, you know, the city's neither Camaro or Anarch, just like DJ said, that agnostic approach to it, which is another weird label for me to hear it, not in religious terms, but the aspect is that there is some religion in this book, but we're getting there. The point is that domain, I think, is often overlooked. And I think they recognize that. And so in this book, I feel that in the introduction, it's just wetting your whistle and understanding you have to look at this from the perspective of not somebody's favorite novel was made. And then this book is the follow-up to that. If you catch my drift, that someone's going to, they're trying to eliminate in this writing, I felt, that somebody could read this book and take ownership for the content. And what I mean by that, if you think of Chicago by Night fans, second edition, or Montreal by Night fans, they're diehard. A lot of people can quote you pages. What's in that book verbatim? We didn't miss a step, and that's how it is. But that's also where you build a toxicity. If somebody's an expert in something, it really ostracizes those who don't have the same level of expertise. And so the discussions are going to be few and far between. And that's kind of boring. It's not every time, but that's been my experience, right? You'll sit around and some people nod their head, but they still don't know who the hell Ezekiel 2517 is, and you're referring to a Montreal by Night, pretty famous pack that's out of it, but you would only know if you're a super fan. But I like how V5 approaches by saying all that old guard's gone and we're building new, and you're a part of that new, because the content's written neutral, it's written open to where you can decide what your city's going to have and build your badass city. Now, if it's one thing we can all be excited about, it's when someone says, in my game, the city we chose is this because this is where I'm near. This is my hometown. Now I'm engaged and I'm listening, because without you having to tell me, oh, I know my hometown. No shit, you know your hometown. You were born there. That's what hometown is. It's your stomping ground. You said you ran a vampire game there? Well, I'm all ears. I couldn't possibly know more than you do. What's it like being vampires in your hometown? And then hear all the cool anecdotal stories where, you know, well, over here at Lookout Point, which is a big makeout thing back in the 80s when we did our thing, whatever, and you went out there and vampires hunt there, this is what would happen. My high school coach definitely became a vampire hunter when this happened, because that guy was like always quoting some more shit. And we know that did that enjoyable story enrichment. I like to call it backpack storytelling. That's what this book allows you to do. When, yes, I have the energy to want to be a storyteller. No, I don't have the experience and I need some tools. And then, is there a tool out there? Boom. Crimson Gutter is your tool. It's a good jump start for that. But that said, that's the introduction, fellas. When we get to the chapters, anything grab you in chapter one? Now, I'm saying this for everybody to note that pretty much the chapters are synonymous with filler. What I mean by that, you know, this one's going to be about the Anarchs. That's like chapter one. Chapter two is like the Camarilla. And then, you know, the... I actually have that back. I think I'm correct, right? Chapter one tells you about the supporting characters and character creation for it. And then like the Anarch gang bosses and some locations you can throw in. Chapter two is the Camarilla. Then you have chapter three being the Freedom of Bold, which is thus an Anarch title. But then you have the Aristocracy of Night, which is also a continuation of that. I'm sorry, I'm trying to look at my notes. I'm speeding ahead. Chapter five is Cain's Angels. That's the one I'm trying to beat around the bush about, because that's the one I want to do the most discussion of, because in my opinion, that's the chapter of worth spending a lot of time on. But we're going to get to that. So instead, we're going to go down here to see what you guys feel of value is in chapter one through three. We'll do it like that.
Nice. I'll jump in first. I think the supporting characters are probably the best supporting characters I've ever seen of any book so far. And the reason behind that is twofold. Number one, it doesn't assume that you have every book under the sun, especially for those of us who are used to having a huge library for Vampire the Masquerade. It gives you an alternative for a clan if you don't have it, right? One character is supposed to be, I believe, a Hikata member. But if it's not a Hikata member and you're only owning the core book, then go with these stats instead. The flavor of the character is still the same, which gives you an idea that the character of who you are, your background comes first before the clan even gets applied to it. So that was really good. The other part about it is because these characters... they exist in such a vacuum of this story that they feel full. They don't feel like they're tied to anything in particular outside of what they were written for, which is to support how your characters will interact with these locations and each other, rather than having, like, this character had existed in X5 books before. It literally just belongs in this book itself, which means that you as a storyteller also feel more free with their path than feeling like you're tied to some sort of canon that you may or may not feel like you're encroaching upon.
Yeah, 100% agree. And all I would add to that is this book takes a second step down a useful path that other books in the past have done. You get your characters, they all have their explanations of like their motivations. But then beyond that, it says to the storyteller, if you want this character to be a sire, here's how they behave. Which, you know, I guess we could have inferred in the past, but it's nice to have it be explicit. But then on top of that, and I don't know, like, you may not like this flavor of game or storytelling or whatever, but it just gets right out in front and says, oh, and by the way, when and if this character betrays somebody, here's probably the angle it's going to come from, right? And it's got that for everyone, which the way that they do it is only like a paragraph per character, but it kind of, it seeds a reminder for a storyteller. You're not making characters for no reason. Everybody's got a reason for being here. Everybody's got their own agenda. But on top of that, you should remember to make your characters dynamic for your players who are supposed to be, you know, in the middle of the frame for every scene anyway. So chapter one's great.
You know, to piggyback off of that, I think the portrayal is also really good because many times whenever a storyteller is writing a character, it's always idealistic, right? Sometimes it's better for you to tell a story because as you run the game, it's easier for you to see it. But the shortcomings, even for myself, are it becomes too idealistic and we forget to root ourselves in certain characters. I think that there's one character who has so much lore and knowledge and they know that they have the power to do so. But when push comes to shove, they're cowards. And if they could just give you up, they will to save their own selves, right? Or in certain cases, I think when it comes to, I think one of the characters who's Zamis, he will 100% give you up if it just means like he's cutting his losses because it doesn't mean anything to him. And even though he embraced you or, you know, for this specific, for X reason, you are only part of a plan. Whereas most people go like, oh, this is my sire. My sire will always take a look after me. You know, that's one of the things that I guess we overlook. But having that portrayal always at least grounds you because it also gives you the out as a storyteller to know like, all right, this is the boundary that they set. And then they could always walk away from it if necessary.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Tasty. So in chapter two, as we start evolving through it, it's like one sort of helps you line up what you're making, what's in the game. You're like unboxing everything. Chapter two is when we start using it to story. We're now going to start seeing how this mix starts coming about. And in the Crimson Gutter, the whole chronicle is the player characters have all become kindred fairly recently is the idea. So there's some things you want to do when you have it going on any new chronicle. I don't care if you have experienced players or not. You want to bring it back to Vampire 101. And they have a whole section on this, actually. By section, a reminder of it and what to do, I should say. And that's the fun part for me. To see that in a book was like, put a smile on my face. That there are folks out there who do believe that you need to do some basic scenes. It's a new character for you. It's in a different place you haven't been. And you got to get down your predator type. That style of feeding that makes you what you are. And there are all sorts of things that could happen when you feed. Now, this should help a lot of players that I know that I've role played with specifically in over the years from starting to do podcasting and just meeting in life in general. And folks develop this attitude that vampires are perfect predators, that from day one, they never have a mistake and it's always cleaned up. And, you know, it's like Aqua Teen Hunger Force feeding. While they're eating the meal, it's important. But if it hits the floor, it explodes and there's no evidence. It's what it feels like. And that's not a story. That's also not what it is being a vampire. And the truth of the matter is, in chapter two, it gets through, it's titled First Steps appropriately to let you know that this is what it's about. It's about learning that here's a whole list of predator type mistakes that can happen in this book that they give you that you might want to consider as complications you could use for players. So if you're an inexperienced storyteller or a storyteller just looking for a different perspective, here's a whole list of things you can look at. Some of them even got me on one or two I never thought of that, and I know that me seeing sound nepotistic, it really isn't. For a lot of the feeding types, you can kind of figure out how they're going to go. They're written that way. But there are, you couldn't think of every possible angle. And in here, it's like, okay, here's a couple that'll throw you for a loop that it hints in. It definitely got me to truncate some thought on some complicated issues based on heavy die role playing, which sometimes you get stuck in. If you're into narrative role play, how you might tweak a story to make it seem like it's not about necessarily the plot. As Mike made the comment, to make the players feel that they belong in the world. It's a breathing world. Who doesn't make the player? Well, name a game where there isn't a player at the table that doesn't play the real wild maverick who's always doing some wild over the top shit. And what's that look like? And they got the predator type that sweats the coterie, can land them in a lot of trouble if they ever get caught with their antics. And it's like, I feel they knew that. So they went through here and went, well, here's something you could do to them to see where they take it and note that, you know, how that's going to all pan out. I really like that layout. It's sort of helping you. A little caveat emptor, but at the same time, it's like, yeah, but have fun with it. Don't stress yourself having to think of the detail. Instead, focus on how you're going to react with story to reinforce what happens. And that was my cool thing I liked in seeing chapter two, the fresh start. What about you guys?
I mean, I can't say that better. I guess the tiny, tiny thing that I would add, they do it in chapter two and continue doing it in the chapters that come after that, is that that same thing we were talking about with characters, they do with places. They give you details about the character of locations that are relevant to the chapter of the book you're in, you know, who might be there, why it matters, what you can do if this person owns it, what you can do if that person owns it, because somehow the book manages to give you lots of details about the places without making the details important, if I'm making sense when I say that. You know, it's like, it doesn't matter who owns Blacklight, but here are some options if Robert owns Blacklight, kind of thing. super smooth. Loved it.
Right. For me, my feedback on that is they took this chapter as it introduces the character, as Bob was mentioning, it has like that session zero type ordeal. And even though we've seen it before, what the authors have done was they put a sidebar as to why they put people together. So the first story is literally the introductory story of, we're going to get everyone together because it's going to be their first time feeding as a group. What? What do you mean feeding as a group? Don't we just kind of bypass that? No, you feed as a group, but it'll focus on what happens when things go really bad. And it's anticipated that it will go really bad, but it does it in two fashions. One, from the subjective point, you know, being like, this is, you know, this is the dice roll may work in your favor, may not work in your favor, but it does it also objectively by presenting you your first white. Like, how often do you actually see the game start off, like, introducing you to a white character, right? A white being a vampire who's completely lost its humanity or its own sense of self, and is just a slave to the beast. The beast is now at the fore. What does it look like? Have you ever seen it before? Because if you haven't, this is your first introduction to it. And especially if you're learning how to roleplay the first time and you're people who haven't played vampire before encounter it, what makes them different? What makes that guy who's now bum rushing the mosh pit and just like starting to tear people apart different than me, if at all? That looks like one of my guys. Is he drunk? Is he not drunk? What's going on? And then that's where the story kind of builds off from it. So I thought it was really cool because now you actually put someone in that position to roleplay it out just from the get. Just right from the start, let's get this out of the way so you at least experience it. And it's not just an afterthought. It's not just you trying to refuel yourself. We just want you to start off on that foot. So I thought it was pretty interesting because the first time I saw that, I was like, oh, here we go. The same thing. Well, everyone meets. We're going to go through this fiend scene, but it actually presented it in a clever way. And they tell you exactly why they wanted to do it that way. So I thought that was cool.
And then from there, story evolves, right? Because it starts out being base vampires in the ninth. They get a taste of anarchs and you kind of tipped a little bit. There's a white story for you. W-I-G-H-T, just for you who may misinterpret my words. Don't do that, please. For them or for me. That's all about them being involved in, honestly, things that are definitely vampiric and should be personal to first night players. And, you know, knowing all that cool stuff. It's just the right info to get them hooked and keep them engaged. The chapter three gets into kind of picking a side. That now that we kind of showed you what the world could be like for at least just starting vampires, there's a whole other society that comes to this, not just anarchs, but the Camarilla. And they kind of showcase a little bit about what that is. They start getting into it. And in it, you introduce some, you know, more characters, more ground, rivalries, the usual. And why I'm kind of just free blasting through that is one, keeping my eye on the time. And two, I want to break open the can, as I want to say when it comes to that. In any city, there's a unique pull to it. As we're just going to jump to chapter five here, called Cain's Angels for a reason. A lot of you are going to think, oh, it's the Sabbat. You'd be incorrect. Not referring to the Sabbat. But there is something a lot of people forgot about that was released in the Cult of the Blood Gods, and that's Methuselah cults. And they have a place in V5, a big one. And I have yet to see a game of V5 where they, you know, someone told me, a lot of people like to message me or, hey, this is the game I'm in. We're doing this in a LARP. They never get into the church, the religions, you know, a Vermilion wedding, if you will. I may think it's laughable that vampires get married, but it's used in game for a political reason, and they highlight that reason. And so just because I don't like something, I don't like the assumption the whole world does it. I like to be proven wrong or to be swayed half the time. I'm unique in that. Show me how you use it. Maybe I will like it, but off the top of my head, not for me. Nobody does that. Nobody really seemed to care about Methuselah cults, I noticed. But the writers didn't forget about it. And this chapter is about, this book is about throwing in a third sect that is not the Sabbat. You know, we're used to the Anarchs. We're used to the Camarilla. They're going to have that classic rivalry. But man, now religion and a religion that doesn't pick a side. How'd you guys feel about that when you saw it?
Well, Well, a religion that doesn't pick a side is dangerous. I like the feeling. They also have a couple characters who are in the Church of Cain, however you want to say it, because they got dismissed. I think one of the guys' names is Hartman or whatever. He's like a venture, very capable project manager, something or other. But what was important is that he's three-dimensional in terms of how he's written, and he is, a refugee from the CAM who is now an anarchist, but is also a member of the Church of Cain, and is still looked at with suspicion with both of the sects that he's touched. And it's nice to me that the Church of Cain, like, it exists on the same graph, but not on the same plane as the other two sects. It's a different part of a vampire's identity, and I think it can serve that role for the characters that your players play. And it is very cool. Oh, also, you don't lose all of the things that make the Sabbat cool, even though the Church of Cain does them different. You get your faith aspects in there, and your ritual, and your titles, and your ecclesiarchy. And anyway, sorry.
I kind of disagree with that, but that's fine. But go ahead, DJ.
I was about to say, I saw it as a huge political tool. And I think because I'm looking at it from the point of a game more than anything else, where obviously everything's kind of romanticized and exaggerated, so you could see the glaring points of stuff. You don't see how strong the church is in general to be able to subsume both sects and have them kind of just stay in the middle. And at one point or another, know that your sect is going to look at things barely when you know that the church is involved, because if everyone comes to both sides, who really has power? If the church has enough power to call in both sides of the wall, who really has power in the city in general? Right? So this is going to cause concern at one point or another. But it's true that one of the things that we don't pay attention to is, like, when humanity is what you walk into, because this is what you're taught, at least in modern, you know, revised moving forward in modern times. But at one point or another, the vampire, without any type of guidance, is going to start losing that humanity. And I think the way that the characters were written to kind of help support where the Church of Cain right now is, you have a character who is not only a drug dealer, he has his criminal enterprise, but money is starting to lose its meaning. He's falling into an area where nothing means anything anymore. So what's the point? What truly is the point? And then to foil that, there's another character who is a Camarilla member who believes that going the route of the Church of Cain is going to unite the sects. How crazy is that? Right? Like, he understands it. He does. He's not a real believer, but he believes in what the church can do. So I see it as a political machine that has, like, it's this very, very ominous thing that just keeps growing and growing. And in the back of my head, I say to myself, the La Sombra, right? And if only because, those magisters at one point or another, especially seeing what they've done during the medieval time, you could start seeing where an influence is spreading and your head just starts to kind of grow. But that's independent of itself. That's just me kind of rambling on in, as I take a look at faith in the form of the Church of Cain.
So the book's going to direct you to Cult of the Blood Gods, page 51, to read up on the church again. Where you'll learn that the La Sombra hunted this faction because it was once called the Crimson Curia. And when the La Sombra got tired of their church antics, the clan with the Banu Akim and Bruja, correct, that's the Trio of Doom, just stomped all over and thought they killed everybody and moved on back in the day. Because they had this belief that Cain was going to come back and start like Armageddon in 1293, but before he could get there, the mud was stomped dry out of them and they're gone. Well, in the modern, the Church of Cain was able to make a resurgence because they said, well, Cain awoken and we were all gone because we were wiped out. And since we weren't there, he went ahead and shut down a spiritual realm and then went back to sleep. That's their excuse. That's the church's excuse. While you were out, I just shut down the Shadowlands and moved on.
Don't worry about it.
They didn't actually target a place. That's actually up to argument, even in the church, right? Deciding what did Cain shut down. But that's how they say it happened and Cain went. But it's, you have to really understand the Church of Cain as they present it. And I'm going to defend the authors of V5 here. There are a lot of fans who are going to say the Church of Cain is a ripoff of the Sabbat. That would be incorrect. It's not a ripoff of the Sabbat. They had the Cainite heresy back in the Dark Ages and the Crimson Curia back in the day. That all came from back in the day. The thing is, the Sabbat had a path of enlightenment, right? The Nadas, we all know about, the truly devoted themselves to Cain and all that fun stuff. They're still around in V5 and they're brutal because that philosophy, and that's what it was not a religion. A religion has dogma and it has ethics, this, that, or the other thing that drive you forward and have a habit of keeping you in check or removing you because you can't toe the company line as it is. But when it's a philosophy, you're left to follow your way with other philosophers because no one knows if you're right or wrong. They just know if you're losing it. So you'll see this a lot. And back in the day, path play was a matter of, hey, you're doing this wrong. And the player who was doing that wouldn't take it as anything but, you know, negative critiquing of what they're trying to do. My vision of the path is better. It may be better, but you need to work with the storyteller that you're expressing that. Mm-hmm. Because storytellers would nudge you back in the path you're trying to role play because it's written a certain way to have a stereotypical feel. And a lot of people would just ignore it and say, I'm a path follower. It would only come up when they ever need to justify an action. And that just wasn't working out. The system knew this. So when you have the V5 update, they make it short. They give it like two or three ethics to follow. And here's what they're doing now. And the Sabbat runneth amok. Read that book. You'll see what I'm talking about. The Church of Cain takes a step back. And why I disagree that it's a lot of Sabbat there is because it's a religion. They did a lot of work to make it a bona fide religion, not just something that is a few rites are done in the backyard that include blood because we're vampires. Yeehaw. Like, you're expected to give a sermon. Pick a topic out the good book, step forward and have that talk, and then see where the players fit in. They even give you cues in the chapter for this where they talk about if player characters show up to the church, how the NPC priest is going to approach them. And then have them more or less give a testimony as to why they're there. You know, to prove why you're going to be here to hear what we have going on. Because the Church of Cain is not stupid. See, back when they were a heresy, or back when they were called the Crimson Curia, or whatever you want to refer to them as, because they bared all those hats. And just a quick rephrase, the Crimson Curia were just the top priests of the Cainite heresy that they had going on. They were just kind of pushing through. It was a very weird series of books that just basically said, here's the vampiric crazy religion stuff that we want to include in this world as well that we feel would be there. Here's the problem, though. I feel, in V5, in this book, with Cult of the Blood Gods, I think they, together, they allow you to see the inherent problem and not problem it is of having this here. It answers two things. Out of game, if you're a Sabbat fan, welcome back.
Yeah.
Welcome back. I'm going to tell you that because why you joined the Sabbat is because you didn't want to be a humanity Bible thumping. Oh, no, it breaks my heart to do this because you're a vampire, damn it. Well, yeah, and you should be. And this is what the Church of Cain espouses. Not that you should break laws and scare mortals, but that the mortals are soulless entities. You are angels reborn to do the work of the demiurge, which is, of course, Cain, et cetera, et cetera. And because of that, this makes you a nightmare creature with carte blanche to run around and do what you're going to do. This is cool. This is what you want to be. That's right where you're at. Where what happened here? Well, the Church of Cain says, give it up to God. It is not your fault. You're evil. The demiurge made you that way. I said God, like God, like Southern G-A-W-D. But what I meant to say was it was just a God, a deity. The demiurge is not a good thing. The demiurge is best added here, at least for this. It's a way to not call it the devil, because that would espouse it a certain flavor. It's not what you're looking to do. It does mean the physical sinning urges, that aspect, that are kind of plowed into you. And it's said that Cain is the epitome of it. The demiurge is all-powerful, maybe not all-knowing, but that would be hypocrisy. We'll leave it there. But it sends forth messengers. And some of those messengers once might have been Mithras, it might have been Lilith, these others have had a shot, but they all failed. Cain is the one that worked. And that person's the one that came to the fore. When you're asking why Cain, why now? They got propaganda for that. They got you covered. And what they say is that the beckoning, Jack, the beckoning in the Gehenna War allows the church to resurrect itself. Because what it says is Cain himself calls his errant children to fill his long empty veins, and only the people in his church will be saved. So this is what they do different than the Sabbat. The Sabbat say, join us or die. And that's black and white as it gets, but it's like, join you? Even if I like join, like if I don't join your little cult, that's that. Well, that's one thing. To say, join Cain or die.
Flavor's definitely different. Flavor's different.
Wait a minute. You're saying there's a dark god walking the earth? No, he's not a god. He's a dark angel. Cain was once a man until he went under the baptismal rites where the god made him his angel messenger here on earth, his murder angel. And he is the one and he slew his own brother for the right of rights, and that's we all descend from him. It's a much more brutal story. But here's the thing. They can't lead with that. And they know that. It says flat out, they don't walk around going, can I tell you about the second coming of Cain and how all of you are going to hell as his playthings? By the way, hell is earth. And I've already lost you. You're walking off, crazy guy. Here's a dollar. Clean my windshield, right? Like, we're not trying to deal with you. Crazy Bob, you know, and his aunt. They're not doing that. What they're doing is they're walking up and they try to test two things. Are you fed up with the way the Camarilla does things?
Mm.
Nowadays, I feel the trend is to say yes, even though y'all love some Camarilla. I know for a fact it's the most played sect, and everybody going to act like, at least the writers, Camarilla sucks. Nobody wants to play in this sect. Everybody wants to play in the sect. What it really is nobody wants to lose in the sect. They don't want to be in the bottom rung, right? They want ups. But Anarchs suck. They're going to tell you it's cool till they got to do some Anarch shit. What's going on? Can't make rent. Okay, I'm going to go talk to that guy. What do you mean I screwed up and killed the landowner? Yeah, you not only killed the landowner, who's going to pay the bills of all the money he gets now? That's an investigation. It's going to lead back to your haven. Do you know how to handle that? Yeah, when the cops get here, I'll knock them out. Your solution, Biff the vampire, is to knock out the cops? Like, yeah, bro, you're going to get hunters here, licky split. And now the Baron, who was a paper tiger, has to come there and hopefully browbeat and threaten Biff enough that he falls in line, because it turns out Biff was swinging yay in that group the whole time, and he didn't know he was stronger than the boss. And we're about to see that come to a head. By the way, it's week two, and that sounds like my players.
Right off the rails. Right.
This is just going to happen. It's just off a plot suddenly, because that's what players like to do. Or any Anarch derivative, because they get up to some nonsense. A lot of players don't like to do that, where we're suddenly fighting other Anarchs with different ideals. It's not what we're here for. And that tends to be a different flavor. But if you get Anarchs versus Camarilla, that's traditional. People are all about that. But tend to want to be in the Camarilla side. And that's where I would take this. This book, luckily, disagrees with me and gives you both. Says, here's what Anarchs could do here. Here's what the Camarilla are going to do here, because the Church of Cain handles them fully the same. You could be the prince walking through the Church of Cain door. You can get the same treatment from that priest. Why don't you sit down and give me a story as to why you're here? When did Cain touch you best and where? And did you get the lollipop? Right? And let's hear you at heart to heart. But I feel we got to understand what the Church of Cain is, because a lot of people are going to get this and go, man, it's cool. And then they're going to do some nodus jump in and consider that, and they're going to miss a whole step, because their belief system is rather unique. So how much of this did you research this like the book recommended and go deep like I did?
No, I didn't go and pull the Cainite heresy stuff from Dark Ages, and I didn't go back and check Cult of the Blood Gods. I stay right here.
I went to Cult of the Blood Gods and called that's it, because if you go back to the old, you're going to get your head filled with old bullshit.
Okay.
Meaning you're going to get filled up with nonsense, and the new updates you. Mm-hmm. That's the point of it. So let it update you. Go from there. I knew the old stuff, but it had been far too long since we read it. So to see the new, I was like, oh yeah, a lot of aha moments, but mostly I was like, cool. That looks good. I like the feel.
That this works.
But let's remember some belief systems here. One, Cain was chosen by God, and all vampires are likewise blessed children. They're uplifted to the role of divine predators. This means that when you go to feed, hunt, kill a mortal, whatever, it doesn't matter. The mortals are like food to you in that regard. Divine food, if you will. But divine food has a sacred purpose. One should not wantonly kill them, commit a super bloodbath, and disappear. You should hunt with purpose, right? However you want to see that, that's it, black and white. I don't need to give examples of it, but that's what it states. You then have tales of layered planes of reality. What this means is heaven and hell, and that we exist on both at the same time. This is where we're back to that duality piece that we keep seeing resurface in Cainites. Reason being, they're immortal. You may think that's weird. The idea of Albigensians or Catharism, if you will, or duality as a whole, you can go back even farther than Cathari for that, and you'll under Albigensians. And what you'll get from that is this. There is a God of good, and there's a God of good, and is the spirit, and there's a God of the flesh, and that's all that is evil. And the earth is hell. We know what the spirit is, the spirit world, and that's the God of good. We transition from this world to the next. So we're already born in hell. We walk in hell. We experience hell. How we live our life here will determine our fate spiritually when we transmute to the next stage of existence. this throws it on its head. And it says that there are multiple layers of reality. We exist at the same time. And because of this, all beings are spirits trapped in liminal state. And what that means is they exist as neutral. They are neither fully physical nor fully spiritual. They're stuck from transitioning, which means it reinforces why vampires are that way, why even mortals are that way, or your chair or whatever. It's like a weird animistic belief that everything has a spiritual representation because it has a physical justification that way. So what do you have here? This means that no one escapes their religion and their ideals. Their outlook is always, if you're a vampire, you're a super predator, you were blessed. You also, because you're a vampire, are one step to escaping hell. Because all the disciplines that are like near godlike are that way for a reason, because they're blessings. When Cain made you a vampire, you were blessed with immortality and what you could do, and fortitude, potence, celerity, dominate, all that fun stuff. These are all blessings to make hell tolerable, to where you do not feel its slings and arrows as hard, as it points out. And this enables you to be the best murder hobo Cain's got. Right? Murder angel. I said hobo because it's funny, but murder angel, right? And that's what he wants until he comes calling. But if you know your purpose and you know the good of Cain, then you get the idea. And then you have all beings being trapped here is an interesting statement. Because why are they trapped? And you'd have to go to your church and ask your individual priest for those answers, because they're not talking. That's a shared intimate secret that only the rites will bring out. You don't think you're trapped? Come to the service on Sunday and we'll let you undergo apotheosis and see what you think then. You know, whatever they're going to say. But the dogma is what is helping them get along with it, right? Pretty much saying a vampire's destiny for the demiurges to select them, make them as holy as Cain, and thus take them to his right side. So when Cain and, well, let me just not say when Cain, that's as far as it gets. Cain chose you, you're holy, you sit with them. And because you're here, you get that. This is achieved, though, by you controlling your beast, not to become a pacifist or some type of vegan, but to gain the ability to let it off the leash in a measured tone, in a measured manner. Of course, we know exactly what this is. This is flying in the face of former Sabbat philosophy. Remember, the Sabbat said, embrace your instincts, become one with the beast, and then ride the wave, as it said. You know, the beast will do what it will, but you control when that moment is, because you will be in tune with your instincts of enjoyment enough to know what does get your interest and what doesn't, and you ride the results out. What this is saying is you have no guilt for when the beast is going to let go, but pray you have a timing involved, because as it points out, the thrill killer that's going to run around slamming into people, kill as many people as it can in one night of horrible bloodshed, is nowhere near as accomplished as the disciplined predator who time and again, through practice and perfection of hunting, that hunter, that quiet hunter, is going to rack up a bigger kill count and not get caught, thus prove themselves a more worthier slayer than the throat killer. You may think this is odd. This sounds like a death cult. It is, because vampires are killers. Vampires are killers when they don't kill every time they feed, but they can, and they have no remorse for it in this cult. Not only that, you're dealing with a cult that says Cain killing Abel did the right thing.
Just flip that morality right upside down, huh?
Just like you got to be, as it says, you got to be amoral to get all this stuff to click in. So if you look at the Camarilla side of things, well, all right, I'm that elder. I now have justification, and this is why I'm be attracted to this group. Wait a second, I'm that new neonate, and I just screwed up and killed 3 or 4 people. One of them was my mom. Should I have ate her? And then Cult of Cain goes, yes, of course. You were elevated. Fate put her there for your meal. Would your mother not wish to nourish you with her own flesh? She did so when you were first born. Why would that change upon your new rebirth? And see, this is why I should be your priest, because I can make it make sense, and then you're hooked. And then we move in, right? On the Anarch side, though, that's where it gets a little dicey. Because yeah, I like Anarchs for this. Like, can you imagine, Mike, trying to sit down? I talked about the campsite. How do you think Anarchs would take this?
I think that this is custom made to draw in Anarchs who are either tired of anarching or guilty. I think it's perfect for such a vampire.
I agree. And this book points out why the Anarchs are interested, too. It's because they want to know why. That fate-filled question. You know, when anarchy gives you a chance, all your leftist friends, if you're one of them, you know this is true. Why a lot of people politically have a problem with Republicans and things like that, and status quo, and people toe the company line, and establish corporations, and even capitalism, is because they hate the fact that there are people who wake up every day, fall into a routine, get into a mental discipline, and they don't have to look up, and they're happy with that. They're content with going forward, paying their bills, getting their food, going home, and routine is routine, and routine makes them smile. They're cool with that. Your leftists tend to be creatives. And to a creative, welcome to hell.
To the mundanity.
Every day, I'm going to wake up at the alarm going off at fucking 8 p.m. when I got to go to my third shift, and I'm going to leave the house and, you know, barely have time to say goodbye to wife and kids if they're even there. And then I'm off to go work the factory or wherever I go to. And then I come back home, insert any job or career you want. But the fact is, it's day in and day out. And it's the same thing. And my happiness comes from the type of food I get to go do, because it's about all I could do, because that's part of routine. When do I see my friends? Oh, when their routine is interrupted. We have to wait for a big event like a holiday where the world takes a break or nobody gets a break. And this is feels dystopian to an artistic person. They feel confined or trapped. And so they seek jobs that may even pay them less just so they could have that free time and a chance to think. That's a lot like the anarchs. Your status quo, F your status quo. We're going to figure out our own way. And this needs to make sense. And I like how this book gives you pre-arguments for the ST to listen to the players who either buy into this too heavily or don't buy into it enough, like are too hesitant. They prepare you for it. The one that stuck out in my head is something I never really thought of, which is super hysterical because I should have. For somebody who's read the material so much, it's a cardinal from the Canine Heresy. I believe it's the Cult of the Blood Gods, where the cardinal's talking to. I believe it's a former cardinal in the Sabbat talking to two others as the group is devolving, and the new Canite church is popping up, Church Cain. And they're telling the cardinal, "Why don't you go run off to your war and let's see who comes back alive and who's going to come back begging to be let back in? Because that's all you're good for. You're not going to understand what we're doing here." And the cardinal's like, what are you going to say to the people? Like, especially the newcomers, when you tell them that, hey, the Cain's real and everything else, when they're going to be like, aren't I a little young to be considered an angel of Cain? He wouldn't even know I existed. We never met. Like, there's no, why should he believe in me? And then how are you going to pitch that? They don't address it like any good religion, right? It's the fact that all your scripture, you predate. Who talking? You, the cardinal. We're talking to you. You predate Christ. The year written down, didn't you get started, et cetera, et cetera. And he doesn't answer the question. You know what I mean? There's a lot of stalemating is my point. What's going on? Mike gave me a thumbs up sign on the thing. I think, I don't know what happened there, but
misclick.
Got it. My point is that the aspect of it is it gives you a lot of challenging thought to actually spend with the Church of Cain portion of this book. And deceptively, they give you a little bit to wet your whistle, and then they remind you to go back exactly where this other stuff is stored. And before, when we did the pod, I still remember the sections of Cult of the Blood Gods where we went over and we were like, unless we don't have anything to give you to show an example of how it's used, so this really isn't going to click. Folks, now you do.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's the best way to put it. Now you have a usage. Now you see how it's done, and you can both of those in tandem work beautifully. It easily became my favorite section. For the book, for all the ideas that you can get going on. But this brings me to my final point and why I said it would be the longest portion here. There's a human feel that there is to all this writing. And what I mean by that, this piece was written, and when I look at this, I like to think that people are working in reverse of the way the books used to be and indulged. We used to look to our books to give us the content, the unique content, the unique directions, the unique everything. And handed to us to play with so that when we made our stuff, our personal characters, and even our ST original plot to work with all that canon, we could dance with the canon. And it was fun. It was like we were part of the writing team and they shared on the ground floor of that space. And so it made it feel that if you ran into Achille or Matthew Dockett or whoever else wrote in anything, that you might be able to talk to them about a character they made and tell them a story about a character you had. It may aggravate them, but fuck you guys. Don't be authors then. And the point is that people are supposed to enjoy your writing and come together and say, here's how I use it. What this is saying is that you become the author. And what that does, I'm not saying it's a bad thing. I'm saying it's a scary place that I hope everybody pushes past. It's a scary place because a lot of people will not rise to the challenge to try to tell their own story. and they're going to rely on others to do it. The number one thing I've been hearing nowadays at a more alarming rate is that nobody wants to storytell, because, and the reason is because they feel they're on the hook. In the Vampire universe, our players are super knowledgeable, so that any ST that gets up there can be drowned in I told you so's. They could be drowned in, I've seen it, I know what it is, I know what that power is, I know what that is, I know what that's from, I know what that does. And I don't see this book changing any of that, because it seems unique and individual, but at the same time, any player reads it, you're disarming them further for anything that goes on. I'm going to give you a tip. The trick to unique is for you to put in more work than you're reading. That's the trick to unique. It is rare the person who's going to put pen to paper and go farther than the writers took you. And so you need to do that. To hit unique is to take this stuff and not take it at face value and leave it to the last hour before game to make your mini notes of how you're going to wow your players in a few scenes. You need to tell a full story and plot, break it up into a series of games, then add your player shenanigans and bullshit as you're relaxed and prepared for whatever direction they go in, and use the tools accordingly. And that actually took less time than I thought to say all that. I'm getting better with my timing, and there you go. But Mike, that's all I had to say on that piece. I'm going to turn it back to you about the Church of Cain. How did you feel about it? And by the way, please disagree with me if you want to.
I don't 100% disagree with you. I just think that the Church of Cain captures and amplifies an angle that was present in the Sabbat. And I don't consider that to be a bad thing, because, you know, you can split the government up into branches, and you can the Roman.
What's the angle?
So the church and the titles and the reverence, the notions of holiness were there in the Sabbat. They were just more intense for some people than for others. Like, when I think of the Sabbat, I think of them as a group of almost vampire terrorist soldiers. I think of the Sabbat more as military than I do church. Whereas the Church of Cain feels like a church more than a military, even though the two could shake hands. Like the Catholic Church also had crusaders, type of thing.
Where the Catholic Church might have had crusaders, I think the part that I now know why I disagreed with you, and it is semantical. I'm going to say that. But it's semantics in a way that changes perspective. So when I say I disagree with the Sabbat feel, the Sabbat is a military organization. It was founded to be protective initially. It was a smaller, they were going to be killed. They would be hunting by elders everywhere, and they were the young teaming up, right? That's their origins. But what they grew into was something that elders were manipulating for their own means, and the youth could see it. And they did it with a creepy agenda. Like, you always wonder where they got the religious hierarchy from. Like, why did you go with the religion route? You never knew why. And then when someone read the Lasama clan book, they went, oh, that makes sense. They thought of it. But when you read the Crimson Curia, you go, oh. The Lasama were so freaking religious in using and so were the Torah. Everybody was. Christ was everywhere. But they really gripped onto the church and manipulated it to be what it is. And the Sabbat kept it. But why did they keep it? Because the spirituality, religion is what holds a group together, no matter what. That is why you will never see a successful society without a form of religion somewhere in it. It just doesn't hold up. You can, folks, check history to see that truth. You'll rinse and repeat, see the rise and fall of civilizations. I'm not saying civilization can't happen. I'm saying if they didn't have some hardcore religion keeping them going, they wouldn't go last. Because the people at home is the people at war need something to believe in. And yes, that should be something they can't prove, but do believe in. And for the Sabbat, you had religious titles that didn't promise them a damn thing, though. Did you notice that?
Yeah.
They said Cain was out there and were the children of Cain and were fighting this war. We're doing this side or the other. But where was their evidence ever that they had this going?
And the Sabbat wouldn't even tell you that you're going to get to meet Cain or that you'll ever hit Suspire on your path. It was, this is what you are, and this is what you'll do, or you'll be damned. Deal with it.
And then they were the cult that never did.
Yeah.
And then they jump forward, and that's why I like the V5 update for that reason, because they never found their clickover. They just became this murderous stomping crew. On the reverse end, when you look at the church aspect, the Church of Cain, I get specific because to me, it's like they took a path, the Nodus, right? They took them, made them made sense again. But yeah. I didn't say made them correct. I said made them make sense. They feel incredibly manipulative. And
I mean, it's a faith.
Well, you do that, huh? Man, you'd be shocked at how many people are probably going to argue this, that you know, religion's not bad. It's guiding and, you know, everything else. And I'm going to tell you something. To those people who believe that, I'm not going to say religion is bad always. I will say it has done some bad shit.
Mm. Understatement of the century.
A lot of world problems start with religion. And that's all I'm saying. But please continue. That was my point. Is that clear that I was just being semantical on it and seeing that? Yeah.
Yeah, I hear you. I hear you. And I agree. I don't think you're off target on that. I guess I don't want to overstate this, but more so than Cult of the Blood Gods, this book's portrayal of the Church of Cain got me interested in playing V5 specifically, not just Vampire in general, because the Church of Cain felt like a different take on the reasons that I like this about, you know what I mean? But no, you're not wrong. And, it doesn't, diminish my opinion of this text at all. This is good. This is great stuff.
Absolutely. And with that, what I'm going to say, folks, that the Crimson Gutter is a good, decent book. I say good, I'm going to say decent because I feel I say good all the time. So I'm being a little different. I do like it and enjoy it in my library, for what it was. It was a fun read. Go out and get it. See what you get to it. Why we're not going through the chapters verbatim on purpose. It's a discussion piece because we want you to have something to read when you pick it up and see if you get a different vibe or feel as well. That's the other one. We want you to read it free and clean the way they intended. And a lot of times they're written to help you go through step by step. We don't want to ruin that if you have players who won't read the book, but they're willing to go through the game in your unique world. Let them have that moment. But this is a great piece to add. You got anything, Mike?
Just another ringing endorsement. If I were going to have somebody start playing V5, I would recommend Crimson Gutter almost as much as the core.
Absolutely. And DJ, before we leave here, I know you had to step away. Folks, you had a phone call, so me and Mike were really carrying at the last minute, spinning plates. Thanks, DJ, for making it back. Hope it worked out. Hope everything's okay. But did you have anything to comment on when it came to Church of Cain or this book as a whole before we're done here?
I agree with Mike. It does work out. And it's cool that this nugget of religion is added in here because, like you were mentioning before, you actually get to see it put in play because there's a lot of doubts. Even I had my doubt of like, how do you introduce this in the location? This is the right spot to introduce it. I think it's definitely worth the pickup itself, if only for the read. It seems like it might be a storyteller thing, but in all reality, if you're picking it up because you want to see how the Church of Cain does work itself out, it's great for that in general. Everything that's written in here, I would probably say, just like Mike, right after the player's guide, you could even if you don't want to pick up a player's guide, I would go directly from like core book to this, just to see how you would start up a campaign in general, or even give you ideas as a player or storyteller. But yeah, I endorse it.
So in the last bit, I forgot, I swore to this person that I would absolutely get her back for what happened. And that person may or may not be my wife. I'm only saying that for legality purposes. But I'm just going to let you know something, folks, completely unrelated to game. Podcast is over if you just wanted Vampire and get the fuck out. But what I'm going to add here is that my wife's sitting back with my beautiful newborn and then our 19-month-old. And you know, she's doing something very beautiful. She's breastfeeding and kicking back and watching 10 feet across the room. And I hear her say, Jesus, my breast is getting bigger. And I'm like, well, breastfeeding, blah, blah, blah. And I'm busy working. You know, I'm researching, typing in, doing notes, whatever. And then she goes, I bet you I can hit you from here. I was like, what? She stood up and I got hit with breast milk in my hand from over 10 feet away. And folks, that's how I know I'm in love, is that not because I've always wanted to be hit with breast milk. Personally, I was a little grossed out by it because it was more shocked than grossed out. But at the same time, you know, someone so beautiful decides that, hey, I like humor and I'm weird. I thought it was great. I hope that brightened your day. And please let me know if you have any stories of weird things that your wife did to you because she was up on hormones after pregnancy. Just let me know. If things get weirder, I will develop them in a good way. I believe in sharing. So with that, thanks for listening. Thank you, Mike.
Yeah, yeah.
Thanks, DJ.
No worries. Thank you.
Have a good one.
Booby milk.
Thank you for listening to our 25 years of Vampire the Masquerade podcast. If you liked what you heard, please reach out and let us know on Twitter at 25 years of VTM, at our email, info@25yearsvtm.com, on Facebook at www.facebook.com/25yearsvtm, or on our website, www.25yearsvtm.com. If you would like to support us, we can be found at patreon.com/25yearsofvampirethemasquerade.